Welcome to the Project Zion podcast. This podcast explores the unique spiritual and theological gifts Community of Christ offers for today's world.
Hello, Project Zion listeners. This is Brittany Mangelson, and I'm going to be your host for today. We are doing one of my favorite types of interviews, and I feel like I say that every time I do an interview, but I'm being honest this time. This is truly, truly one of my favorite types of interviews to do. They are our fair trade interviews, which feature the stories of converts to Community of Christ, people who have found themselves later in life joining this community. So today we have on a new member, and her name is Elle Mills Warner, and she is in Seattle. And so, Elle, I'm just going to throw it over to you really quick to introduce yourself, and we will dive into the interview.
Well, thank you for having me. I am originally from Ogden, Utah, and was born and raised there. Graduated undergrad from Weber State University in French and International Politics. I've moved around the country a bit, lived in San Francisco, in Houston, now here in Seattle. I have a Master of Divinity from Star King School for the Ministry, and don't know what else to add into that.
Awesome. I grew up in Provo, so I definitely know Ogden well, and I went to Utah State, so a little bit further north, but very similar. Mm-hmm. So, Elle, you were just confirmed, what is it? Was it last week, the week before?
Yep, 1 week ago today.
Okay, perfect. So, but before we get into that, we're going to talk about your background a little bit with faith. So why don't we just start at the beginning, whatever that looks like for you. I'm curious to know what faith and religion and church looked like for you growing up.
Yeah, I grew up in a LDS faith tradition. I was baptized at 8, like most good Mormons are. And my family was an interesting mix because my mom was on and off active in the church growing up. There would be periods where she would take us every Sunday, and then periods where she wouldn't go. But she always professed to believe it. My dad, on the other hand, was inactive through my whole life. He never went to church, professed belief in it occasionally when the subject would come up, but never really talked about it very much. And my extended family on my mom's side was pretty active. And on my dad's side, they were kind of the stereotypical Jack Mormons where, you know, we're going to drink, we're going to smoke, we're going to do all the fun things. But if you ask us, yes, we definitely believe. We would never question believing. And so that was kind of the home environment I was raised in. And when I was a teenager, I became very serious about the church, and I was attending every Sunday and going to seminary and really wanted to just completely immerse myself in the church because at the time it seemed like the most important thing in the world to me.
Yeah, that's really interesting to have a background like that, and I guess not take, I don't want to say the easy way out, but like when you're socially pressured to go to church, like you had an quote unquote easy way out, you know, to like not go, because if your dad wasn't active and your mom was on and off, like you really had to work for it or like grab on to your spirituality yourself. Like that's what it sounds like you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That it was a choice for yourself to join the community, to be part of the community.
Yeah, it very much was. You know, during the times where my mom was more active, I would, you know, it would be a lot harder to not go because she was loading us in the car and selling us. But I actually really enjoyed going to church, and I always had this kind of very deep spiritual connection growing up. And the church meant everything in the world to me, and the community I had there. But there was also this sense that I didn't belong in the community. And as a child, I really couldn't figure that out. But also, I didn't feel like I belonged anywhere. So that was always something that was just this persistent nagging in the back of my mind as I was in the church.
Do you think that because there was a varying level of church activity, did your peers treat you differently? Did ward leadership treat you differently? Did you feel like a quote unquote project? And anyone with a Mormon background will probably know what that word means.
I never felt like one because I was active. And so the leadership didn't treat me differently. If anything, they praised me for being active when the rest of my family wasn't. And the kids never made fun of me for that. They had a whole arsenal of other things that they would pick on me for. So that wasn't a huge issue. But I never felt like I belonged in the church, and I felt like, well, this is God's truth and I need to find my place in it. And for a while in my teens, the idea of conformity to it was where I went. I'm like, well, I've got to make this work. I've got to hunker down. If I'm not fitting in, that's my fault. I think that's a very common thing that a lot of people feel in the church, that if it's not working, it's your fault.
Yeah. And that pressure to conform is such a response to that, of that need, that desire to fit in. And so you think like, okay, if I just act like everyone else, if I look like everyone else, if I play the part, if I play my role, then everything will work out, which I'm shaking my head because that doesn't work.
No. And it really was not ever going to work for me. I'm a trans woman, and growing up in the church, I just had this thought over and over again that something wasn't right with me, like something didn't match what I was being taught. But also, I was really, really into boys, and that really was just not going to fly in the church. And so there was that struggle and that tension through my teen years. And so conformity was burying any desire, anything that I had that was not in line with what they were teaching me. And of course, that led to me, you know, trying to focus the attention off of myself and pointing out anyone else's failures in the church. I became that person for about a year or two. And then I had an experience that really started challenging my thinking. And that was when I was 15, I had the privilege of going to Europe on a special program for youth. And the first place that we went was Rome, and we toured the Vatican. And seeing this 2,000-year-old church with more power than any religion has ever had, and more history than my church could ever dream of, and being in the epicenter of that church and just seeing everything, it was breathtaking for a 15-year-old who was pretty sheltered from the world. And we went to several other churches and cathedrals on the trip, but the Vatican really stuck with me. And I remember coming home and just kind of thinking, what was that? Like, that was not, you know, that was not Temple Square. That was not anything that I'm used to. And so I went to the library and I checked out every book on Catholicism that they had. And then I started reading about Christianity in general. And about that same time, 9/11 happened. And everyone was talking about Islam. And so I started checking out books on Islam, and that just kind of led into exploring religion in general. I started reading everything I could about it.
Yeah, again, I'm just really impressed at your the drive that you had to not shove religion away or not be afraid. It sounds like, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but it sounds like you maybe felt God's spirit at the Vatican, and maybe that was a little jarring for you because I know what you were taught, right? Like you're not supposed to feel the spirit outside of some place that's not like Temple Square. But that sent you on a journey of seeking for yourself and exploring religion in other Christian sects, and then in Islam, just that you allow that experience to open yourself up instead of closing in. And I'm just really impressed by that you were able to do that at 15. So,
yeah, it was, and I passed it off to myself as just curiosity. Even though I knew there was something much deeper driving me, it really was like when I was in the Vatican, I felt something I had never felt before in my life, something that's I felt had been missing, that I just couldn't make that same feeling happen anywhere in the LDS church. And I again thought, maybe that's me. Maybe there's something wrong with me. And about a year into reading about that, when I was 16, 17, somewhere in there, I had a friend who was Greek. And her dad was actually the priest at the Greek Orthodox Church in Ogden. And she invited me to Orthodox Easter, which is usually on a different date than Western Easter. It's usually at least a week later, if not all the way up to a month later, because they use a different calendar than we do. And I was like, well, yeah, you definitely want to go explore that. Like, you're not going to turn down the invitation to go see that. And I thought it was going to be a lot like Catholicism, because in my studies, I learned that they were the same church for the first 1,000 years and split. And, you know, I had read some things about it. And then I walked into that building and all my expectations went flying out the stained glass windows. It was very different. It was very ancient. Like, the Catholic Church is an ancient church, but they've modernized quite a bit. The Orthodox Church has not, and they are doing things that they've been doing for centuries, if not millennia. And you really feel that when you're in there. And I had that same feeling that I had in the Vatican, this feeling of God's. And I left the service just like on cloud nine, until I got home and I felt guilty that I had felt it there, and I just couldn't feel it in my own church. And that started a faith crisis in me. And at the time I was in such black and white thinking, I was like, it has to be one or the other. And it, you know, which one is true? And that really started me down this rabbit hole of trying to find the true church in my mind. And I eventually kind of concluded I didn't believe in the LDS church anymore. And I admitted that to myself around age 17. And even just admitting it to myself and writing it down in my journal felt like a huge betrayal of my family and my ancestors. I had ancestors who came across the plains with Brigham Young. I had ancestors who had gotten on boats and sailed halfway across the world from Wales to be in Zion. And, you know, these people who had given up everything, was I just going to turn my back on the gift that they had given me? And yeah, I thought about all my social relationships and how many of them were built on the church. Most of the meaningful ones were. And I thought, okay, no, you've got to push this down. You believe, you definitely believe. You got to just plow forward through that. And I ended up trying to make it work. I was going to church and to mutual. And each time I went, I just felt hollow. And then, again, telling myself, you're just curious, you want to see what else is out there, I started going to other services. I went to Catholic services, Buddhist services. I went to a friend's Baptist church. Just a number of things just to tell myself, you know, you're just looking. You're just filling in the blanks of what you've studied, even though I, on some level, knew, no, you're looking for your home. And it was a very lonely time. It was also a time of a lot of very intense family stuff. I was going through a lot of abuse at the hands of my father, and also dealing with my sexuality and everything else at the time. It was not an easy time in my life. And so I felt lonely. I think I felt lonelier then than I ever had felt in my life.
Yeah, that is understandable, especially because living in Utah and having multiple markers, quote unquote, against you, and having the guilt of your pioneer ancestors, I know that guilt as well. To go through all of that while working through your sexuality and while trying to deal with home life and while trying to be a high school student sounds, to be honest, unbearable. That's a lot for a 17-year-old to go through at once, and to have your faith being challenged, your belief being challenged, and not being fully free to explore that and to figure out who you are in a safe environment. Like, that's just, that's a lot. That's a lot to go through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I don't know. It was overwhelming at the time. But I just kept telling myself, you can make this work somehow. You know, you've just got to believe. And I realized I didn't believe. And there was a lesson on the Book of Abraham in seminary when I was in my senior year of high school. And the teacher had like a globe and was showing how, like, you know, the days are caused by the turn of the axis, and it's like, but on Kolom, a day is 1,000 years and everything. And, you know, looking back on it, I'm not sure how like official that teaching was, knowing what I know now, but that's what my teacher chose to do. And they were just talking about Kolom and everything, and I remember hearing about this and reading about it and everything, but at that point in time, I was just like, what? Like, what are you talking about? And like, for the first time in my life, it just sounded so ridiculous. And I actually raised my hand and I said, you don't really believe this, do you? And he asked me to wait in the hall.
Oh, yikes.
And I had not been like, I mean, I was one to ask questions and things like that, but that was the first time I'd really like stepped out of line and said something like that. And basically just kind of told me, you know, you can ask questions, but you need to be respectful about it. And, you know, we're here for your questions and all this thing. And I was like, okay, maybe I shouldn't phrase things quite like that again. After that, there was one more seminary class I remember attending. There might have been one or two in between that, but the next one that I really remember was they had the missionaries come, and they were basically teaching us ways to convert our friends, ways to share the gospel with our friends. And I thought about all of my non-Mormon friends in this, and I was just like, I'm not going to give you their they actually gave us these little blue slips of paper and said, give us the names of all of your friends or any inactive people that we can come visit. And I looked at this and I'm like, I'm not going to go put my friends' names on these and have you go and talk to them about something I'm not sure I believe anymore. And I tore up the little slip of paper. I wrote blasphemy over all the little bits. I stood up, threw it in the garbage can, walked out, and I didn't go back to seminary after that.
What a what a sassy exit. I love it.
I am a dramatic person. I've come to really acknowledge that.
Blasphemy.
You know, I didn't say anything as I got up, but I that was my exit. And I never do anything quietly. My mom always laments that. But I still didn't tell anyone. And then a couple of weeks later, we went to a midnight showing of some movie. My friends and I did that all the time back when that was more of a thing before they started releasing movies the Thursday before. I drove one friend home and she told me that she didn't believe anymore and that she was worried about that. And I was like, oh, thank God, there's another one. And we leaned on each other and kind of told everyone together. And that did not go over well. We strained friendships. I lost a lot of friends. And I watched my social network overnight just evaporate. And so I felt even more alone than I had before. But I also learned who my real friends were in that. And, I think people always come to a point in their life where they have to learn that lesson. And unfortunately, this was the time in my life where I had to.
Yeah, gosh, that's really intense. I honestly don't know how young folks, how people who are either in high school or college are able to leave the LDS church, because so much of your social structure is built around church. And so to step away from that is just really intense. But like you said, it sounds like you did learn who your best friends were, you know, who your real friends were. And I'm glad that you did have that one friend that confided in you, and then it provided a place for you to confide in her. And find some common ground there. Yeah.
Yeah. And the friendships that I did maintain are still my closest friendships today. And to the point where they actually feel like family to me in a way that even my own family doesn't. You know, we've been through a lot together in these friends, and we've changed a lot through our lives and still maintain this closeness. I'm so glad that these people were there for me through that.
Yeah, for sure. I'm really glad that you still have been able to maintain relationship with them. And that, yeah, they're still part of your support group. That's really, really important. So I must say, I don't want to like skip us ahead, but I'm very intrigued. I didn't realize you said you had an MDiv. Okay. So that tells me that your little seeking heart that started when you were a kid, that took yourself to church or, you know, chose to be involved, that is just kind of who you are. So I have like that in the horizon of how does the story get to that point? What else happened? How did you take control of your faith story? And I guess the reason why I ask it that way is because so many times, and I can speak for myself, when you go through a faith transition, it almost feels like you're left with so much rubble. And how do you move forward to try to build something from, you know, this relationship with God that you had or that you want to maintain, and what is true, what is not, what is culture, how do you read scripture? I mean, you know, there's so many different points of rebuilding. And so the fact that you have gotten an MDiv sends the strong message to me that you were able to do it. So just keep telling your story.
Yeah. It's funny because this, when I was going through it, I thought this was going to be the end of the story, that I was going to find something and Oh, this was just the beginning. Like, all that was the prologue, I found out. Yeah, when I first left, I thought, you know, well, you felt things in the Greek church. It's an ancient church. You've been looking for the church Jesus founded. So it's got to be, you know, your options are the Greek Orthodox Church, the ELDS Church, the Roman Catholic Church. That was kind of the mindset I was in at the time. And I started taking catechism classes at the Greek Orthodox Church, and there was just something in me that was like, this isn't where you belong. I loved the Greek church, but I just couldn't make that work. And so, you know, that left the option of Roman Catholicism for me in my mind. And that's where I ended up going. And I threw myself into that. And I ended up being baptized at the Easter Vigil the following year. And the whole time I was in the Catholic Church, I felt this call to the priesthood, which I knew would take a while for me to be able to go into the priesthood. And so I started thinking, well, maybe you should do some things to prep yourself for that. Why don't you read this Bible thing everyone's always talking about that you've never actually read entirely on your own? Maybe you should read that, and that will help you. And so I did. One summer, I sat down and I read the whole Bible, every book. I didn't read it in order. I had the deacon at the Catholic church I was at told me, never do not read it from Genesis to Revelation. You'll get bored and you'll never finish it. Read each book that as a whole book by itself, and then move on to a different one, which is always how I tell people to read it. Because, yeah, you'll get bored if you just start in Genesis. So I read the whole book, and I remember getting to the end and going, what an awful book. What the hell was that? There was just so much horror in it and very little like transcendent wisdom or anything. Like, a lot of it was just these terrifying stories and these just horrible acts people do in the name of God, a lot of it. And I realized how much of the Bible in like seminary and in childhood and everything had been presented to me in a very whitewashed and easy to digest manner. And that none of the like really complex issues were in there. Like, yeah, Moses killed somebody and fled charges for most of his life, or you know, God commands Joshua to commit genocide and he gleefully does, and the entire book of Judges, that was a book. And like just the terrors of the book of Revelation and all these things, it was just so hard to digest and so hard to accept. And I kind of thought, I don't know if I'm a Christian anymore after reading the Bible, which was certainly not what I thought was going to happen by reading that book. And I started drifting into more of an earth-centered spirituality at that time. I had friends who were practicing Wicca, so I started kind of moving into that. And I decided to go to college at that point, and I started studying international politics. And that exposed me to the horrors that happen in this world every day and the really challenging things. There were, one of the courses I had to take ended up being a genocide studies class. That is not how it was billed to us, but that is what it ended up being. And if you want to see the absolute worst of humanity, you should read the books that I had to read and watch the movies I had to watch in that class. I don't think you could get any worse of humanity than that. And I fell into this chasm of just despair about the world. And I really was like, if there's a God out there and this is the best that he can do, I'm not interested. And I really got mad at God and lost faith in God completely and moved into this very hostile atheism at the time.
Was that a relief to you? Was it heartbreaking? I mean, how did it feel to feel so let down from God, by God?
It was, it honestly felt like a divorce, or like I had lost someone who had been there my whole life, you know, like a death. You know, Nietzsche said, God is dead and we had killed him. And I understand that lament. And I became very like surly and antagonistic towards religion at the time. You know, I had already gotten to a point, because Catholicism is very fine with science and very fine with evolution and things like that. So like the normal arguments that people had against God, those weren't what concerned me. What concerned me was just the things that are allowed to happen every day. And that no one will come to most of these people's rescue, that most of them will die alone and scared. And that was what I had a problem with. So there was this sense that I had deluded myself into believing in God. And that was, there was a lot of self anger at the time with that. And I thought that was where I was going to stay. And then things took a very different turn. I ended up entering one of the worst depression spells of my life at the end of 2013, rather. I had a lot of setbacks romantically, a lot of setbacks professionally and personally. And felt like I was just falling flat on my face. And just before New Year's, I started coming out of it. And I thought, okay, you need something to distract yourself. You've always wanted to visit different religious traditions that you've studied. And why don't you visit in the new year a different religious tradition every week and keep a blog on it? And so I did. That was my 2014.
Every single week you went to a new religion.
Yep. I did this in Ogden, Utah. And most of the churches were in Ogden. Some of them I had to go as far south as South Jordan. Or actually, can't remember, Bluffdale. Bluffdale was the furthest I went for one. But yeah, most of them were in my backyard in Ogden, and Utah's one of the most religiously homogenous places in the country. Yeah. So if it's that diverse in Ogden, Utah, it's that diverse in this whole country.
So real quick, I'm not entirely sure, but I think I've read your blog. Is you been talking? Because did you go to the Salt Lake, or not the Salt Lake, you did you go to the Ogden congregation?
Yes, I did.
Community Christ congregation? Okay. We're having one of those moments live on Project Zion. I really think I read your blog, because we started looking into Community of Christ in 2014. And I was Googling, and just, I am pretty sure that I came across your blog. Did you also do some YouTube videos or no?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
Yeah, that's me.
This is the best. Okay. I'll stop talking, but I did consume your material and keep talking.
Yeah. It's funny. I actually come across that a lot in like various religious circles. A number of people are like, that was you? Yeah, that was me. So that happens all the time. And I was still approaching things in a lot more of a skeptical way at that time, but I had softened quite a bit from my more surly days. And I was realizing that a lot of the assumptions that I made about people were wrong in these traditions. I kind of also learned that what official doctrine is in all of these things is not necessarily what people believe or how they live out their faith, which that was a big eye-opener. Because, you know, in the faith tradition I grew up in, if you didn't believe and live it out the way that it was taught, you risked excommunication. So seeing that that wasn't necessarily how people were, and that in some of the churches I went to that had some of the most, in my mind, you know, oppressive dogmas and doctrines and fundamental things, that some of them ended up being some of the most kind, open-minded people that I encountered, and that was really counterintuitive. And then about halfway through, this call to ministry started coming back to me, and I was like, oh no, put that down, that's yeah. No. Then I got done with the project, and there was nothing distracting me from that anymore. And I thought, okay, well, you could be an atheist and a Unitarian. Why don't you look into the Unitarian seminaries? And so I did, and I applied to Starking, which was my first choice, and I got in. And I uprooted my life and went to Berkeley. And seminary was very transformative for me. And the strange thing, I went to seminary and I found God. And I went down the entire path for ordination in the Unitarian Universalist Church. I did everything. I did the congregational internship. I did a unit of chaplaincy internship. I got my MDiv. I jumped through every hoop. I danced whenever they told me to dance. I did everything. And I got to the end where I was just about to submit all my paperwork to the credentialing body and went, I've been feeling for a long time in it that this was not where I was supposed to be, but I chalked that up to cold feet or not wanting to commit to something or whatnot. But I remember someone, it was my supervisor in CPE, which is a chaplaincy internship program. And I was mentioning these struggles I was having and that I wasn't sure if I could stay. And she said, and she's a minister in the United Church of Christ. And she told me that, you know, it's not uncommon for people to have cold feet and everything when they get to this point. But I realized at the end of the day that these were my people. And for better or worse, God had called me to serve them. And it was that sentence that made me go, oh, that's what's wrong. These aren't my people. And I realized I had to leave at that point, and it took me a little bit of time to actually do that. But then I felt like I was in a dinghy in the middle of the ocean. Like, what do you do now? Where do you go? You built your entire professional and personal life into this, and now you're without a denomination, you're without a professional plan. Like, what do you do? And it reminded me of the time when I left Mormonism and just kind of felt like I was alone in this sea of possibility, but no direction.
So what did you do? I mean, I'm clearly, you did something. Mm-hmm. But as I'm hearing you talk, I'm like, oh my gosh, because you've been through so much at this point, right? You've already left one church. You've tried out at least 52 other churches. You know, you've been invested. You've learned about other religions. You have just worked so hard to find a faith community and to find a pathway to God that works for you, and to get all the way through seminary and to get to that point and then realize, ah, these are not my people. That has to be devastating. And mm-hmm. That's a lot of blows to hit one person. So yeah. how did you move forward after that?
The way that I moved forward was I felt like I needed to be lost for a bit, that I needed to figure things out. And I went down to, my friend was starting a ministry in El Paso working with migrants after the Trump administration had started doing their horrible, horrible things down there. And I went down there to help them get everything off the ground with that. And then I spent a summer down there doing that. And then I ended up back in Utah for a bit before just kind of going, well, is anything here for me right now? And I reached out to some of my connections, and I ended up getting a job at a nonprofit here in Seattle, which is what I'm doing now. And I love it. It utilizes a lot of my chaplaincy skills. So it's been a great fit. And once I got here and settled a bit more, during seminary, there was this sort of feeling that I had from God kind of saying, you know, all these religious traditions that you've had, they're all sort of languages that you use to understand me, to that nothing is, that these are all man-made doctrines, and you know that, you've known that for a long time. But there are different ways that people have tried to express their awe and the inexplicable things that have happened and the things that they see in the world. And so these are languages, but they're not the ideas, they're not the feelings, they're not the core of what people are experiencing. They're just ways to express it. And you've had the chance of being multilingual. And so you have to learn how to reconcile your past. So in seminary, I reconciled my past with Catholicism, with Earth Center traditions, with Greek Orthodoxy, and I found ways to make that work. And a lot of it is tied into Jewish mysticism, strangely. And I tell people I'm multi-religious and that I'm not mixing and matching these to create my own thing, that when I'm in these religious traditions, I am fully, when I'm at Mass, I'm fully participating as a Catholic, and I'm fully present there. I'm not adding in my own things. When I'm in a pagan circle, I'm there completely in that space. Same when I'm at a Greek Orthodox church, that these things are just, they're different paths that I use to connect to God. And then sometime last year, it was almost as if God came and said, you know how I made you do that with all the other religions? Well, I'm going to make you do that with Mormonism now. And I was very resistant to that one. I'm like, oh, no, 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 no. We closed that door. We're not going back. That was traumatic. That was like, no, we're not going there. And of course, we went there because, you know, God had different ideas for me. And I had remembered Community of Christ from my blog and from some contacts I had from that who I had talked to, but I had never like really seriously sat and thought about Community of Christ. But I started looking into like John Hammer's history on it and everything. And he's somebody that I've talked to on and off through the years. He found me through my blog. And the more I started studying that, the more I kind of realized how fascinating the history of the Latter-day Saint movement was, and how complicated it was, and how it was, a lot of the early movement was a lot closer to my own sort of religious journey than I had given it credit for. Like a lot of the, I started reading a lot of it, and I'm like, huh, I could see like a lot of my friends from seminary getting involved in something like this or starting something like this, and things just, you know, snowballing out of control like they did at points in the early Latter-day Saint history. Like, I could actually see people I knew in this. And I realized that there was a lot that I had given up by not exploring that part of myself. That when I had, you know, wholesale rejected everything from my Mormon past, there were things about my own self and my own identity that I had given up in that. And that a lot of it was rooted in this pain and this not wanting to look at that part of myself, because I associated everything with that, with pain. And then I thought, okay, well, I know Community of Christ is a lot more open, and if they're willing to allow these kind of history lectures and everything, maybe it's worth looking into them a little more. And I started attending online services, and I had this feeling in these services. You know, I had to do online because COVID. I got to discover this church during COVID, which has been very interesting. But as I was doing the online services and seeing all these people on Zoom, I realized these are my people. Like, in every sense of that, they share the religious heritage that I have. They share, in some cases, probably DNA and language that other people don't understand. And there was this sense of camaraderie. And then I ended up watching one of the YouTube videos that from World Conference, where they were singing the Spirit of God, and I just had this extremely emotional reaction to it, because I realized here are my people singing the song of my people on the land that Joseph Smith called Zion, and it has absolutely nothing to do with the church in Salt Lake City, nothing at all. It was kind of like being rejected by your immediate family and having a lot of pain and baggage, but then discovering there was a really cool cousin out there who got you, who understood what you were going through and everything, and that you bonded. And I kept attending services, and the more I attended, the more this piece of me fell into place, that these were my people, and this is my home. This is where you belong. And that's not something I've gotten in any other religious tradition. And I've been allowed to keep everything that I have already, that I wasn't expected to change or give up anything, that I got to bring it all. And that was not only accepted, but it was celebrated in my congregation, and that it was, my questions weren't ignored, they were encouraged. It was a better homecoming than I could have ever expected. And that's really been kind of the theme of this whole thing, was coming home when I thought I would never have a home.
Wow. So often with these interviews that I've done with people who have come from the LDS church, I often end up crying, and I did get teary-eyed because so many of our stories are so similar. And even though the particulars of them might be different, and, you know, where we grew up or our family background or whatever it may be, one of the things that LDS folks often say is the church is the same wherever you go, right? It's so correlated. It's so much a part of you, no matter if you grew up in the United States or somewhere else. And what I've found is that means that when you leave that community, again, our stories are the same, because we have the same foundation, the cultural foundation, the doctrinal foundation. And so I always am just so struck at, yes, the stories are very different, and yet they're so exactly the same. And mm-hmm. Hearing you talk about seeing the World Conference, seeing the Spirit of God, I remember that as well. And just recognizing like, oh my goodness, there is a community that from my perspective has taken some of the best things about this foundation that I shared with them. And like you said, that it was totally different from the church in Salt Lake. And for me, it's just been a continuing unlayering of that reality and being able to still maintain my pioneer heritage and the pioneer heritage of my brothers and sisters, of people who have come from the LDS Church, and celebrate that we don't have to give up who we were in order to be celebrated in this new community. So I just loved hearing you verbalize that, because that has been my experience too. It's, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it made me realize that all of the people in the Latter-day Saint traditions, they're all my family. And that means my LDS family and friends, yeah, they're my family, they're my kin. They've always been, they always will be. The ex-Mormons, you know, you leave Mormonism, yeah, you stop believing, you never really stop being Mormon. Like, I think those of us who've made that journey really kind of realize that at some point. You're always in the church, even if you're out. And that also means that the people being held hostage by doctrine and everything in the FLDS church, under the horrifying abuses that have happened under Warren Jeffs, those are our siblings, and we owe them. We owe them the love and care that we would give any of our siblings, and that we have to be there for them on some level. I don't know what that looks like right now with how insular they are, but those are our siblings suffering. And put in that perspective, the church became a lot wider for me. It's not any single denomination. It's all of us with this shared heritage and shared family. We have to be there for each other.
Yeah, I think that raises a really important and challenging point. I know that I've participated in the Sunstone Symposium here in Salt Lake, and gosh, I would say no less than a dozen churches are represented in that all tie themselves back to Joseph Smith. And I've had a lot of conversation with different leaders in different churches, and recognizing, you know, when I hear the story of their church, when I hear the story of their doctrine and their theology, it's very similar to what I grew up with. It's very similar to in Community of Christ. We had these old preaching charts, and it looked they looked very much like an LDS plan of salvation. And, you know, Community of Christ has largely moved from that point to a deeper understanding of who God is and what the quote unquote plan is. But at the same time, it's still part of our story, right? It's challenging. It's because I don't think, as much as we want to separate ourselves, whether we are ex-Mormon or whether we're lifelong Community of Christ or whoever, it's all part of the same story. And that's challenging. Mm-hmm. So with that, I'm wondering, I'd like to hear, because your thoughts earlier on Community of Christ almost made me cry. So I'm wondering if you can share a little bit more. What has kept you coming back? You said that you essentially found the church, started investigating the church during COVID. So that compromises how things look. But what has kept you coming back? What are the things that you are most interested in Community of Christ? What's gotten you excited?
A lot of things have gotten me excited. I've co-facilitated some worship services and some. Our congregation does Thursday night activities and things like that, and I've led some of those. And a lot of it, I've been able to utilize some of my Earth-centered traditions and that and everything. So the fact that not only can I have that, but it can actually, you know, benefit the community in some way has been wonderful. And also just like a lot of the relationships that I've built in the community with people who understand where I have been. And that's been huge, having that. There's also just been, you know, the worship services are both very different from what I grew up with and strikingly familiar at times. Hearing the same prayers at communion that I grew up hearing, obviously with modern language, but the same prayers, and having the same sort of structure expressed very differently, but the same sort of structure as far as priesthood and other things. There's a sense of familiarity that I didn't realize I needed in my life. Having someone like Karen, who I haven't even really expressed this to her, but there was in one of our meetings, I asked her if she could just give me a blessing at the end of it, and she did. And having somebody who's a president of the 70 pray for me and have it be a woman and have it be this prayer that uses my own name, my real name, and uses the pronouns that I had always wanted to hear. I didn't realize I needed to hear that from somebody, and how deeply impacted I was from this very simple blessing that I'm sure she didn't think about at all. And, you know, just said whatever came to her heart. And yet it meant everything in the world to me in my own healing and in my own journey to have that happen. Something that I didn't realize was even possible, and something I didn't realize I needed. And just a lot of the things that have come up in sermons that I feel like challenge me and move me into trying to be a better person in this world. There's a lot that keeps me coming back in spite of COVID, in spite of Zoom fatigue, which has kept me from attending a few services lately, because some mornings I just wake up and, you know, Zoom's so much of my day that I just wake up some Sunday mornings and go, no, I actually am not going to get on that thing.
I definitely know how that goes. And in fact, I haven't been doing as many Project Zion interviews during COVID because I'm so zoomed out. So
yeah.
No judgment there. So it sounds like you earlier when you said that you felt like you had found your people, it sounds like that is true, that you are able to be your full self, your whole self, the person who you've always been, and that person is now being affirmed and celebrated and welcomed in a way that just feels really normal and natural. And just, again, I get really close to crying a lot on these episodes, but just that you have come home. And I think that is the story that so many of us have shared, and I think we'll continue to share. So thank you for sharing that. Okay. So what are your hopes for Community of Christ? What do you hope to do in your congregation? I mean, again, this is COVID, so it's a little bit tricky. But what would you, and then what would you say to other people who are maybe looking into Community of Christ? How would you, I guess, like verbalize who Community of Christ is to them?
As far as my hopes, I really look forward to the day when I can meet everybody in person at the church itself. Like, I've dreamed about that since I started coming to these online services. And I've met a few people, you know, one-on-one, socially distanced with masks on and everything from the congregation. But it's, you know, I want to actually be in a worship space with everybody. And hopefully sometime this year that gets to happen. I'm hoping to get more involved than I am right now, and to be challenged and to be able to do a lot of the deep spiritual work that you can only really get in community. And my hope is to see the church continue to grow and to ask difficult questions. That's one thing I love about this church, is that difficult questions are not shied away from. They're tackled head on, and that it is uncomfortable, and that it leads to a lot of hurt feelings, but it's still addressed. It's not buried under the rug. And I'm hoping to see more of that and to participate in these discussions and these challenges, and to have my own beliefs challenged in it. As far as what I would say to others exploring, you know, there's, if this is where you feel called, you'll find people who are willing to embrace you in this movement. I'm not going to say everyone will, because I, you know, it's a large enough movement that there's a number of voices, but that you should not be afraid to come in with your whole self and to be honest with yourself and with others as to where you're at with all of this, and to just trust in the divine, whatever that word means to you right now, that there's a place for you somewhere, even if it doesn't end up being here.
Ah, that's so beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing all these thoughts. You've brought me to the brink of tears multiple times, and I don't know, maybe I'm just having an off day where I'm feeling extra emotional. But again, I really think that these stories are sacred, and I'm always really honored when people are able to come on and share it to the little Project Zion audience. And I don't take that lightly. So thank you for trusting us with your story. So Elle, again, I just want to thank you for sharing with us. And I do know that you have written a little poem about your faith transition story. So if you would like, I would love to have you read it just to finish us off.
Yeah. So this is a poem that I wrote several months ago when I was really feeling the sense of homecoming that I talked about earlier. I ran from the red brick, I ran from the bishop, and from bread and water on silver trays. I ran from the prophet, I ran from the 12, and from their voices of judgment and hate. I ran from my neighbors, I ran from my family, and from revelations from the clouds. I ran from golden plates, I ran from seers and stones. I ran from granite spires soaring into the sky. I ran from Brother Joseph, I ran from Father Young, and from the brethren with their wounding tongues. I ran from Kolob and from Abraham's book. I ran from the Savior and his father Elohim. I ran from garments, I ran from Jehovah, and from the priesthood, the people like me. I ran and I ran away from those mountains. I ran and I ran, I looked for a home. I met strangers who became my family. I ran, but no place was home. I ran and I ran, but there was nowhere left to go. I ran from my people and a past which haunts me. I ran and I ran, trying to escape. And now here I stand before my people once again. I don't have any shame. And they hear my voice, There are no conditions. They only want me. There is just one revelation. It is God's perfect love. I ran and I ran. I ran right to them.
That was beautiful and so well encapsulated the story that you just shared with us. So thank you so much, Elle.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to Project Zion Podcast. Subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcast, Stitcher, or whatever podcast streaming service you use. And while you are there, give us a 5-star rating. Project Zion Podcast is sponsored by Latter-day Seeker Ministries of Community of Christ. The views and opinions expressed in this episode are of those speaking and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of Latter-day Seeker Ministries or Community of Christ. The music has been graciously provided by Dave Hines.